kpfk.org/smalls.
When the revolution comes.
Support comes from the LA Phil presenting Gustavo's Fiesta at the Hollywood Bowl on Friday, August 21st, in celebration of Gustavo's 17 years of music and more with the LA Philharmonic. This very special concert features the LA Phil with conductor Gustavo Dudamel, Los Tigres del Norte, Silvia Perez Cruz, Lila Downs, Mariachi Reina de Los Angeles, La Sonora Dinamita, Los Panchos, and many more. Further information and tickets available at HollywoodBowl.com and KPFK.org.
This is Feminist Magazine, a weekly radical radio show and podcast produced by a diverse collective of feminists. And every week, we bring you a mix of intersectional stories and guests to help you resist and engage. And I'm Lynn Harris-Ballin, your host today, and this is what feminism can sound like. Of You is a recent archival documentary that traces the history of Kilawan Colectivo, which is a pioneering collective of Filipina lesbians who came together in New York City in the mid-90s. Today, we're talking to one of the two filmmakers. The film is directed, written, and edited by Barbara Malaran and Desirina Almoradi. And today we're joined by Barbara. Hey, Barbara, welcome to Feminist Magazine.
Thanks for having me.
I loved watching the film. I have so many questions, and I would love to hear your background and feedback around that. But first of all, tell us how you and Desirina decided to make this film.
Well, I think it was definitely a testament to reckoning with our lives. So what was happening for us is that we came back into friendship after a pause, and we realized that, you know, during the COVID time, when folks are coming out of the woodwork saying, oh, you know, how was community organizing in your city, in your town? And there was a request for us to, you know, come back to tell our story. And so I just want to let you know that, like, why is this history? Why now? Right? It's because Kilawan's story has lived in videotapes and it's lived in closets for decades. And I'm a part of that history and documenting that from the outside. I didn't want it to disappear the way that so much of our community's history has. And so, you know, we're telling it now because people who built it are still here. They're here to speak in their own words, because generational trauma keeps the silence going if nobody breaks it, and because API queer women organizing keeps getting left out of the larger queer history narrative.
Yeah, exactly. That the patterns keep repeating, and then younger generations are not learning the history because we don't have mechanisms to pass queer history along. So I think a documentary is a brilliant way to do that.
And, you know, it's interesting. I mean, we see it as a documentary. It's like different narratives, right? With like tone poems, with visual experimental imagery to, you know, just even current recordings of where we're at. I mean, it was just a whole slew of I love you, I hate you, I forgive you. And we explore all of those in terms of like what it takes to build relationships and what it takes to break relationships and come back to, you know, a renewed sense or a wiser sense of relationships and friendships in community building.
Right. Hopefully wiser, right?
Hopefully, yeah.
Yeah, I think it seemed to me that you were organizing in your 20s. Is that correct?
Correct. We were in our, most of us were in our 20s, yes.
And that's such a sort of experimental age in so many ways in our lives. And then you followed what seems to me to be a pattern that I've seen in so much queer organizing, particularly for queer women and lesbians, where one thread starts in the gay movement and one thread starts in the feminist movement, and then you realize that neither completely meet all of your needs.
Exactly. And that's where we realize that we need to address our own needs. If there isn't a seat for us at the table, let's make that table. Let's bring our seats in. And it's not to throw anyone under the bus. It's just that, you know, out of these situations, it's just basically a redirection to give ourselves the care that we need to give ourselves. And, you know, when we give ourselves that care, we also reckon with, you know, struggling to get those needs met in the larger world outside of our circles. And so that's the struggle, you know, building resilience when it doesn't seem to happen, you know, when there are, you know, circles that don't welcome us or, you know, have a different idea of how we should present ourselves. And, you know, representation matters, you know, and it's also being, you know, authentic to ourselves. So it's a process. So in our 20s, you know, we were reaching and trying so many new different things and new ideas. But we also looked to our elders to just ask, you know, well, what worked for you? And it's so interesting because I find myself now in the position of an elder, you know, also, you know, sharing my experience with younger folks. And they're just asking us when they see our film, like, that's happening to us right now. We're breaking up. We're making up. We're, you know, meeting new thinking. And all I can say is you've got to live your experiences. Continue to document your stories. Your story matters. Just as when I thought that my life was not worth a story to tell, it turns out that after all of this time, in order for me to move forward, I need to name myself. I need to tell my story. The same thing with Kiluin Collectibo, the organization, this networking group, this social or political organization, you know, moves forward because we still talk about it. It doesn't go through a second death, as some might say.
I love that. Yes. So that doesn't get completely lost is a second death. So very particular to your story is coming out of Filipino culture. What did you feel were the sort of cultural pressures that were particular for all of you in New York in the 90s?
You know, I think in the 90s, it was such a rich time of, you know, of LGBTQ organizing. And, you know, lesbian culture was just out there in the media with like films like Bound. We had Katie Lang. There was a lot of, you know, pop culture references to like the commercialization of like gay culture. And, you know, it was a great time to be out and proud. Now, coming out to your family, to the, you know, cultural Pride Day parade, such as the Philippine Independence Day parade, it was a little more challenging because it was so close to home versus the more of like, you know, we could just blend in with the white, you know, majority with everybody else and we could kind of just flow. Now, it was, in terms of the pressures, was trying to find our voice when we didn't see representation necessarily at the bars or at the clubs or in the organizing spaces where it catered to more of a, you know, a majority that didn't represent more of a diverse section of us. And, you know, what was also interesting, too, was the language of the binary. You know, many of us struggled over time because we felt sometimes trapped in our roles of presenting or of presenting more masculine or feminine or even, you know, switching, you know, playing different teams, you know, and in even the more painful points of mental health when it came to, you know, resilience over growing older or maybe even transitioning. Many of us, we did not have the understanding nor the safe place, safe spaces to create, to have those tender conversations. And it is with sometimes I imagine for myself, you know, I regret not being part of that necessarily, but I also was learning, such as all of us were. And so, you know, being older, being able to share this story, I now have the experience and wisdom to have that empathy. And I hope that, you know, this inspires other viewers as well.
Right. It's such an emotional journey through those three different sections of the film, which I love the way you broke it up into I love you, I hate you, I forgive you, which was, I thought, a brilliant structure. But it also gave us these, as you said, these incredibly tender moments and these moments of you just want to hug these young dykes and be like, oh, you're working it out.
I know. It's sort of like writing a love letter to your younger self and saying, oh, man, you know what? Life will happen as it unfolds, but I'm going to hug you. I'm going to give you a long, big hug because you're going to come through it. And, you know, we've had folks who've watched our film and have gotten so emotional from across backgrounds because it is really a story about human connections. We all want to belong to something. We want to be loved. We want to be remembered. It's so important, not just ego, but just to exist and thrive. Those were words that my younger years, I didn't think I, you know, kind of speak around, you know, this soft, tender part of myself, my own soul. And it's not performative. It's a non-performance. You know, it's just being who I am. And to a younger person, you know, coming out and trying this new world, maybe it's overwhelming. I would hug myself. I'd give myself a long, big hug.
For sure. One of the sections of the film that I loved so much was the camping meetup, where you met up halfway between Toronto and New York with this Toronto Filipino queer group. That seemed to me something where it was sort of a diaspora's connecting across borders. Can you tell us more about that?
Absolutely. I mean, imagine, you know, just connecting with other Filipino, like, lesbians and bisexuals, and of course, people, you know, exploring their gender expansiveness across borders. And it just made us excited to feel like not only can we exist just in our city, we can connect with folks across across state lines. And of course, this was just at the beginning of the internet. So if you can imagine the phone trees, the paper trails, the printed out maps to look for the longitude and latitude where the lesbians are located. I love sharing the story that we hopped in a minivan to look for lesbians. It truly was like that for many of us from Toronto looking for us in New York or other folks moving out to Chicago or Massachusetts. It's like it was like coming home. And love is sort of like that when we want to never say goodbye. And that's what that whole connection to the Toronto group, because they were very inspirational to us as they were very organized and politicized with their local issues, as well as, you know, educating us on the world and also, you know, what it meant to live having two cultures, you know, in their North American culture and their Panay culture and then the queer culture.
Right. The intersectionality of it all. And you referred to this earlier. One of the threads was these poetic letter readings that you used as transitions. And it was one of the lines that I loved so much was, the mythology of myself is dying, sort of very reflective. What inspired you to use those? Where did the letters come from?
That's a great question. You know, we all have a story about ourselves, and sometimes it's a very fixed story. And for me, I had this idea that I would live my life a certain way and things would last forever. And that is the tale of my story, and I don't have to tell it. But however, you know, life happens. It throws us some curveballs and also helps redirect us to, you know, the better purpose once we've outlived or outgrown our stories. And so, you know, when I think about these mythologies, they are these lessons that, you know, I've taken to learn more about myself and feel that I don't need to exist as one. I could exist as many other versions of myself.
Yeah, that absolutely comes through the growth and the expanding and shifting and questioning, self-questioning is there in the film. So, Barbara, the friendship between you and Desirina, how did the two of you come back together to work together if you said you had actually some distance in between?
Yes, I mean, you know, we were reunited by a mutual friend of ours who's actually our photographer and community archivist. You've seen many of her pictures and photos in our film. Her name is Pandai Banali. And she's an elder to us who's brought many of our friendships back together over the years. And through the reconnection, Des and I decided to collaborate and learn again how to collaborate as creatives and learn to work between time zones. As she was working on the East Coast, I'm here on the West Coast, you know, working the witching hour and learning to trust again as friends and as collaborators and having a vision of sharing this story about community and belonging. And, you know, the way we share our experiences, it is connected. We go through experiences as a shared story. And in Philippine culture, we call that kapwa. You and I experience the same thing, even though it is different. We all feel together with you and go into that. But I wanted to say that kapwa is that connectedness to the stories that kept us together in making the film and in continuing to share that with other folks. And, you know, everybody who is seeing that sees that, hey, I've been through that too. Hey, I am looking to, you know, find that I'm not the only person who's going through, you know, issues in my life with friendships or with, you know, my bigger self, or even about, like, you know, what it means, you know, when folks in my group, you know, sleep together. And what does that mean for, you know, the continuing, like, who we are as an organization? You know, when organizations end, does the friendship end? You know, when movements stop, are we just monuments or do we keep moving? So through these questions come more of like, what is the question really for us to connect as we move forward?
Yeah, that very much came through. And I was, as usual, completely sort of gobsmacked by the fact that it's a quarter of a century ago, the 90s. I keep feeling like it was yesterday. But all of this historic documentation, the footage, the photos, the ephemera, you were telling the story of a movement and through your personal lenses, right?
Yeah. I mean, it was a movement. It was definitely a time to be had. It's not, you know, at this point, without the videos, we can't say to folks, well, I wish you were there, right? This is a very tender piece of like all of these recordings that I've captured and decided to keep in a closet for years and say, hell, you know, I'll just take it out and just kind of look at it and go, ha ha, and, you know, move on. But you know what? It was definitely part of a larger story. So thanks to, you know, my ephemera in my closet, including Panda's photos, including Desirina's also interviews that she had over the years, and other folks' stories, we were able to create this larger story about connection.
Yeah, and you were all very brave in a lot of ways. The marching in the Filipina Independence Day parade, the actions you took, political actions, the way you made yourselves very visible, and then also emotionally brave in now making the film.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, I felt that I could do anything because I had this group. Mm-hmm. Without that group, I don't think I would have done the marching or the, you know, or educated myself with what was happening in the world, or even like critically, you know, look into my intersectional identity without this group. So I'm very grateful for that. I'm also grateful too for, you know, being vulnerable to share hard parts of my story today while we were making the film. The walk through the forest was sort of like just burying our souls to nature, saying, you know, we've marched through canyons of the city crowds, we've marched through demonstrations, we've marched through camping, and here we are, more or less like a solo walk through the forest, just kind of just being upfront with, you know, mm-hmm. what this means now. And it was a very, very hard thing to swallow, to kind of own those emotions. Because I feel like, you know, for myself, for anyone with a camera, it's so easy to hide your emotions and just record the moment, what everybody's feeling. And finally the camera turns on us and we really tell it like it is, right?
You did. That's a deeply powerful part of the film. It really is. So the film has been on festival circuits, it's won awards, and now it's available for folks to see, right? Can you tell us more about that?
Oh, absolutely. Right now we are streaming globally through OTV, Open Television, and there is a way to see it by going to the OTV app, which is just look up on the internet, Open Television. You could access it through the internet or download the app, and you can definitely subscribe for the year to watch Because of You, including great other films done by other folks of people of color, as well as intergenerational stories, intersectional stories as well.
That's fantastic. So we'll make sure to include that link on our website and in our socials as well. And just also to go back to the title, Because of You is such a great title because it's exactly what you were talking about, that you would not have all done it individually. You were only able to do it because you were a collective in that sense.
Yes. And it is a love letter to gratitude. It is because of you, it is that impact, that it's not a transaction. It's more of this, you know, giving this receiving, and it continues, mm-hmm. you know, and I feel like with this, we are continuing our screening tour. We have some dates that we're going to be updating on the website soon, as well as some requests for, you know, private screenings as well for folks who want to screen it for their birthday, or if there is like an event that they feel like it is wonderful to screen that, to have other folks in their families or communities, just let us know. Go onto the killoonfilm.com on the website and look for, hey, if you want us to host a screening, we can definitely work with you on that. We're also distributed through Third World News. So if there's any educators out there or any orgs who'd like to, you know, do the screening, we could definitely work through our distributors. As well as if you want to do more of a, you know, community storytelling as an art activity after the film, we could definitely work with you to bring your stories to life.
That's fantastic. I think this would be so great in classrooms for sure. Mm-hmm. Because it's particular, but also very universal.
It is very universal. I was very surprised to feel that a lot of folks really resonates with everybody mm-hmm. across the board. Mm-hmm. That universal
yes.
love. Yeah.
For sure. What was your favorite feedback from anyone from the film festivals?
There are two. My favorite feedback, and it's actually quite an emotional one, was in San Francisco screening. We had someone come up to us and he said, "I wished that my sister lived long enough to see this." And I said, "Oh my gosh, this was really an important story to share with folks." Mm-hmm. And the other one was when we screened our film at in our house in Bushwick, we had the younger queers heckle at the screen and yell at the screen because they said, "That's our story." They were literally talking to this to the entire film. I loved the interaction.
It's absolutely a pattern that repeats. Yeah, for sure. Well, we've been talking to Barbara Malaran, and Barbara, along with Desirina Almoradi, directed, wrote, and edited Because of You, A History of Kelawan Colectivo, which was a pioneering collective that shows radical tenderness and the political urgency of this queer Filipinx collective that dared to exist loudly and unapologetically in 90s New York City. Thank you so much, Barbara.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you.
And could you just give us once more the website in case our listeners missed that so that they can find out more?
Find out more about our film, kilawinfilm.com. KILAWINFILM.com.
Perfect. Thank you, and it was great talking to you.
Same here. Thank you, Lynn.
I want a ticket to anywhere. Maybe we make a deal. Maybe together we can get somewhere. Any place is better. Starting from zero, got nothing to lose. Maybe we'll make something. Me, myself, I got nothing to prove. You got a fast car. I got a plan to get us out of here. Been working at the convenience store. Managed to save just a little bit of money. Won't have to drive too far. Just cross the border and into the city. You and I can both get jobs and finally see what it means to be living.
The radio program Making Contact is now produced by KPFK and Pacifica Radio. And we're looking for volunteers to join our team. The station needs people who want to help book guests, conduct interviews, or script the show, especially bilingual English-Spanish speakers, people who have experience with audio editing, and someone who's skilled at enhancing interviews with archival footage, music, and sound effects. If you'd like to join this exciting transition and be a part of Making Contact's future, please email makingcontact@kpfk.org. That's Making Contact at kpfk.org.
Support for KPFK comes in part from C-Sharp Entertainment, presenting El Dimeola live in concert, the Guitarchitect Tour. Live at the Alex Theater, Saturday, September 19th, 2026. It's an evening that honors the past, embraces the present, and looks toward the future. Guest appearance by Ardeshir Farah of Strunton Farah. Further information available at thealex.com/shows and kpfk.org.
You're listening to Feminist Magazine on KPFK on 90.7 FM and kpfk.org. I'm your host today, Lynn Harris-Ballin. And coming up next... As organizers and activists, we've all been in those meetings, you know, the ones where we need to make decisions as a group or to vision a larger goal. And those kinds of meetings can be a struggle. They can be filled with lots of egos and unspoken agendas. Our guest today is Adrienne Marie Brown. She's an author, a visionary thinker, and so much more. And she has a book called Holding Change that offers a profound way to transform that process in meetings and in larger movement building in a time that we really so deeply need to shift the ways we work together and envision our future. So welcome to Feminist Magazine, Adrienne.
Thank you, Lynn. It's good to be here. Thanks for having me.
So many exciting and expansive ideas to talk about here, but tell our listeners a little bit about what can holding change look like?
You know, for years before I was formally a facilitator, I didn't know that there was a language for facilitation, for what it was. It was just something that kept happening. You know, I'd be in a meeting like, we need some synthesis, or we need an agenda, or we need, we feel stuck. Like, how can we get through this moment? And my friend, Mia Herndon, who is now part of the Emergent Strategy Collective with me, she was the first person to hire me to facilitate. And over the years, I would find myself using different terminology to try to explain what it was I was doing. And one of the emergent terminologies was holding space. People would say, we're holding space. And that was made a lot of sense to me. It's just like we're really creating and holding a space in which humans can move through the difficult with each other with as much ease as possible. And once Emergent Strategy came out, what became interesting to me was that it wasn't just that we were holding a space in which anything could happen or in which stagnation was cool. We were really trying to hold a space in which change could happen, meaning that the individuals in the space felt like they could change and that was okay, that there was room for them to change, and that the relationships between the people in the space could change, and then that the group altogether could take seriously the fact that they were trying to change the world. And that's what, you know, people who are doing social justice, people who are doing movement work, it's basically people who are like shamelessly saying, there's some things with this world that could change and we believe in our capacity to shape that. It's also an homage to Octavia E. Butler, who in some way, I think all of my work, I always try to touch back to the stone of wisdom that she offered us with so many of her texts, but particularly in the parables, she talks about change and shaping change, being a shaper as opposed to a victim of change. And I feel like that's the call, especially right now when circumstances are so overwhelming, both externally and within movement. It's such an overwhelming thing to try to be like with each other and hold each other. But Octavia said, all that you touch, you change, and all that you change, changes you. And for facilitators and mediators, what we're doing is holding that, holding the changes that happen inevitably when we are in contact with each other, which we have to be on this tiny planet. So that's all the stuff that's happening in that title and in the book.
So much happening in the title. And a sentence that really resonated for me is the impossibility of consensus calls us to find ways of working together in difference.
You know, when I first started working in movement, I naively believed that, oh, if we just all had the same information to work from, we would all reach the same conclusions and then we would flow forward together in a heavenly, you know, Garden of Eden-like existence. And, you know, and so I became obsessed with data initially, you know, like let's get all the information. Let's make sure we have all the information. And then of course, you know, what happens with humans, which is we have all the same information. We reach different conclusions because we come from different walks, different socializations, different perspectives, different needs. Many of our needs are unmet, you know, and unnamed. And so we're coming into any space. The difference is actually the point. And I didn't really understand that until I started really studying the natural world more and studying the patterns of emergence and really starting to understand that in a healthy ecosystem, the biodiversity is the health, right? The number of different ways of being that can coexist is a sign of the health. And so then I started thinking, well, what if we facilitated that way? What if we facilitated where the invitation was to have as many different ways of being in the room as possible, but to find ways to align ourselves in emotion towards futures that could sustain all those differences rather than futures that could only sustain one way of being. And that has become and continues to be of deep interest to me because I keep changing also. Like I keep changing mm-hmm. as an individual. So it's not even, it's just like each person is the same unto themselves throughout their lives. Right? It's like we are coming into being and we're changing constantly. We're changing each other. We don't want to achieve a consensus that requires everyone being the same way and thinking the same things. And Loretta Ross has a beautiful quote about this, which is a group of people moving the same direction and thinking the same thing is a cult. A group of people thinking different things, but moving in the same direction is a movement. And that, you know, I feel like it's such a teaching that it's like, how do we be a biodiverse movement that allows for the many different ways of being, right, to exist? I think disability justice is a great teacher of this also, right? It's like, how do we resist the idea that there's some norm that we're all supposed to achieve and some singular way of thinking that is correct? And instead, how do we embrace the fact that we're complex and we're changing?
Right. And I mean, you've partly started to answer this, but the title of the book is actually Holding Change, the Way of Emergent Strategy, Facilitation and Mediation.
Yes.
So it's part of a series based on your thinking around this idea of emergent strategy, which was your 2017 book. And it's about how we can partner with change,
yes.
right?
Yes.
So it's a very multi-layered concept, but can you tell our listeners a little bit more about that? It's so fundamental.
Yes. Yeah, so, you know, looking at the natural world, there's certain elements and there's certain principles that, if you pay attention, seem to be present throughout all of the functional systems. So adaptation, intentional adaptation, being able mm-hmm. to adapt in ways that move us towards life. Life continuously moves towards life. Fractals, like there's some patterns that move from the smallest scale to the largest scale. Interdependence, right? That in nature, everything is in relationships with each other. Nothing is trying to be an individual pulling itself up by its bootstraps in spite of everyone else, you know? And the species that are surviving have these patterns. And emergent strategy was starting to ask the question, what would it look like if humans humbled ourselves to find our patterns and to be in pattern with everything else? And the question, I don't know if you've ever sat and watched a murmuration of birds move through the sky, mm-hmm. but they're avoiding predation and there's some guidelines to how they do it. And I started thinking, like, what would it look like if our movement was like a flock of birds? What would it look like if our movement was a murmuration? If we could trust each other, if we had the right space from each other, if we understood ourselves to be a body in motion rather than a bunch of bodies at odds with each other. So emergent strategy was that first offering. And then I've been gathering different texts and ideas and thoughts that went with it. But something people kept asking me about was like, well, how do you do facilitation? Because I get a lot of positive feedback about my facilitation. People are like, oh, you're mm-hmm. so great at this. And I'm like, some of it is nature, which I put that in Holding Change. There is a nature. There's some people who I think have a nature that orients around and makes it easy to do facilitation. Like it's in us. We pay attention in a certain way. But some of it can be learned. And I think everyone should have at least a basic concept of it, a basic capacity for it, because we need it in our families. We need it in our communities.
Right.
We need it in our workplace. Even if we're not explicitly doing organizing, we need to be able to be in right relationship with each other. So Holding Change is my offer towards that. And there's a little bow to the Taoist text, which is the Tao Te Ching, because, you know, they talk about the way that can be named is not the way. Like immediately, as soon as you try to say it, you know, like trying mm-hmm. to put in a book, like, here's how I do what I do. I knew that there were some things that would never be translatable or couldn't go on the page. I'm still doing my best to offer the way of emergent strategy, facilitation, and mediation. And to that end, I have a lot of contributors in the book a whole series of other Black feminists who are alive and working right now who have different ways than I do. And I thought that that was a way of nodding to that, right? That it's like, it's not actually one way. The way is a complex offering of ways of adapting together, breathing together, listening to each other, leaning into each other, grieving together, growing together.
Right. And let's talk about that. You've got this deeply significant section of writings under the heading Black Feminist Wisdom.
Yes.
And it includes some of my personal favorite movement writers, thinkers, organizers. Yeah. I mean, particularly like Alexis Pauline Gums and Malkia Cyril. And you talk about being part of a lineage, right, as a facilitator. What does that lineage mean? And how do these particular writers that you invited in, how do they hold that lineage with you?
Yeah. Well, you know, for me, I think there's a moment when you recognize nothing we're doing is being done for the first time. You know, Octavia
right.
talks about, like, there's nothing new under the sun, but there are new suns. And I love that idea of, like, how do we, in our work, honor the fact that, like, there's nothing new. We learned this from ancestors. You know, and when we look back at the people that we honor as organizers, really a lot of what they were doing was also facilitation, right? They were gathering, they were synthesizing, mm-hmm. they were helping people figure out what moves could happen. That's a core piece of what it means to be moving other humans along in any shape. So some of them that are quoted in the book are Ella Baker, Fannie Lou Hamer, Harriet Tubman. These are people who I think of as a lineage of Black women, Black feminists who pointed the way, helped gather, helped listen, helped to decenter, right? They were like, it's not about me. You have to make
right.
a choice to opt into history. You have to make a choice to opt into your potential and your greatness. So for me, the lineage is there. And then I think if you look at most of those people in the book, all of them are people who I've seen name explicitly. Oh, I'm in the lineage of Audre Lorde. Adaku Utah, who offers us the care bear, the care bear approach of these care teams that allow a room to care for itself and create a community culture of care. She says that she partnered with Harriet Tubman in her work to create Harriet's Apothecary and create a healing arm inside of movement, right? Mm-hmm. A lot of the people in the book, Alexis is one of the first people who really gave me direct access to a lot of the lineage, by saying, we need to take these words of Audre Lorde, I am who I am, doing what I came to do, and we need to chant them, and we need to let them be embodied in us. Harriet Tubman said, my people are free, not will be free, but are free. You know, mm-hmm. how do I embody that? So I think these people, one of the things that I wanted to do was shine a light on them while they're alive, right?
Oh, yeah.
And say, like, you are a part of Black movements, and you're part of multiracial movements, and you're part of movements for change, in large part because of these people. These people are behind the scenes, holding space, holding change, holding connections, mediating conversations, helping people create safer spaces, helping people think about security, helping people think about boundaries. Like, these are these Black women who are behind the scenes doing this work. And often they don't get seen until they've passed, and, you know, people are like, okay, now let's give them their flowers. But I'm like, they're alive. You can access their wisdom right now. You know,
yeah.
They're going to continue to learn and change and write, and you should be paying attention to them. So that's what felt important to me. And to have also expressions where it was like, it wasn't just Black feminists who were femme presenting or femme identifying, but it was a
right.
wide spectrum of Black feminists who I included in the text, because that also feels important to understand in the current moment. But I think that they are the lineage for any future generations of movement, right? We are the lineage, and I wanted to name ourselves and weave ourselves in explicitly. Like, here's what we are thinking about. Here's something that we have to offer. Here's some things that we know.
We're talking to Adrienne Marie Brown about her book, Holding Change. So lineage in the sense of, it's not a past thing that you sort of look at and polish and put on a shelf, but it's current and living and woven
yes.
in. Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like one of the things that Indigenous mm-hmm. worldview holds is that seven generations back, seven generations ahead,
right.
that you're actually always in the river that has directions of flow in both ways. And something about that to me is like, well, then how do I be a responsible future ancestor, as well as how do I responsibly receive what has been offered to me.
They're talking about things like breathing and boundaries and, you know, space, safe space or not safe space. There's actually mm-hmm. both. And also the ways of facilitation that you offer are all deeply part of feminist thought. And yet so much we hear sort of the 101, like the equal rights and the, but I love that you bring in all of this kind of deeper and more horizontal, collaborative, those aspects of feminism that sometimes we forget, right?
Absolutely. I mean, I think that we can get so caught up in contending for what's the definition, what's the way that it's done, and we really can focus on the mistakes that have been made. Every movement is constantly making mistakes. And I think there's, you know, my thing is I don't think there's failure. I think there's data. And I think we can harness that data. I think we can say, oh, what did first wave feminism push and open and do? And what was the data? What did we learn? What mm-hmm. did second wave feminism do? What did we learn? Where does intersectionality open new pathways for us? And what did we learn? Right. And to me, if you hold it that way, what we're learning all along is there are different ways for us to be leaders. There are different ways for us to be in community. And if you have a balance where all the different parts of a society are held equally in shaping those ways, all of a sudden new possibilities come into being. And my partner is someone who studies masculinity and masculinity outside of the idea of being something that only men have or can practice or can do.
Right.
And I think about this all the time that I'm like, we're on the precipice of gender opening and breaking wide and really starting to understand it in such a different way. And mm-hmm. to me, feminism is a core part of how that happened for me, is that I understood that I was like, oh, what I was given and told were the roles of gender are false. And mm-hmm. if those are false, then I can start to shape for myself what it means to be in this world and be a human being taking responsibility for the conditions. And all the people in this book are folks who I see that way.
It's all part of sort of unraveling hierarchy in a sense,
yes.
right? And
yes.
my favorite phrase, you know, there are so many labels, but my favorite is really the umbrella of gender expansive.
Exactly. You know, so much of what's happening anytime we're holding a room is that we are trying to help people move past the constructs that we have been given in this period of history. And 100 years ago, they had different constructs, some of which are still holding on for dear life, some of which have shifted, right? But right now we have these constructs. We have white supremacy. We know white people are not supreme, right, to anyone. It's just, right, mm-hmm. but there's the construct. We have patriarchy. We know men are not supreme. So we have the constructs of gender. We have these constructs of even what work and life are, right? There's all these boxes. And when you're facilitating, you're trying to help people move beyond those boxes into a sense of us, into a sense of the we, into a sense of like, what are the gifts I have to give and what do I need from this group? And then how can this group shape what the community needs? And that deconstructing, right, is where it gets really exciting and really interesting if you're with facilitation that is curious about, you know, who is in this room and what is possible. And we can give ourselves permission to be outside of those constructs. Every space, and I think Sage Crump speaks about this really beautifully in the book in her essay on culture. Every space is a place where we get to practice the cultures that we want to create in the world. So it's not just, oh, we're here for a meeting. It's like, oh, we're here to practice the future, right?
Wow. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love that. You talk specifically about ways that you're instinctively gifted at doing this work, but you've made a kind of user manual here, right, that offers ways for any of us to learn how to do this and facilitation at that sort of simple definition to make things easier. But what led you to do this work?
You know, I do think it was in my nature. Like I was drawn to justice work very early on. Like it was mm-hmm. something that shaped. And I think partially it was because I was raised in a household where at a certain age, I became aware that my parents were in active rebellion. My parents were in interracial relationship. They'd fallen in love in the South. And there were places that we would go where we weren't welcome and where either one of my parents wouldn't be welcome. And we would respond, you know, as a family, there would be this sort of moment of like, we are walking out of this place that is treating my father as a lesser human being because he's a black man and this. So those things imprint on you and you start to recognize that the world is unjust. Then politicization was so helpful for me. So I will say part of how I came to do the work was realizing there are things about the world that needed to change and that I felt responsible for those things changing. And then the actual work of facilitation, I mean, it really was like, this is what kept coming up and it was a way for me to learn. And I talk about that because I feel like it's so important to say, for the first 5 to 10 years that you're doing anything in movement, really you're a student and you should be a student. You should be learning. Right. And I think maybe some of that has gotten lost in translation with the way social media and the internet move now is that people are like, I'm in and now I need to know everything and I need to be leading. And you know, it's like, wait, you know, we should always, I think, always be learning all the way to the very end. But I think especially those beginning periods, it's like we need to be in spaces where it's okay to make mistakes and it's okay to put our foot in our mouths and it's okay to, you know, say like, I didn't know that, right? Now I'm learning that. So when I look back at baby Adrian coming into movement, I didn't know about transgender identity. I was still internalized homophobia. I was like, you know, running my life and I hadn't fully come out yet. I didn't really understand the power and beauty of blackness. I knew that I had black power and black pride, but I didn't fully have that in-depth like gratitude for the gift of my blackness. There's just so many pieces of it that I'm like, oh, that all came through politicization. I didn't understand how the economy worked. I didn't understand that most movement is actually saying yeah to socialism, even if they don't want to put that language on it. Like, I didn't understand those things. And it took years, and I continuously keep learning, which is how I know I'm still alive. And one of my mentors, Grace Lee Boggs, lived to be 100 years and 100 days old. And one of the things that I learned from her is that you can stay curious all the way to the end, right? You can really keep learning. So for me, facilitation was a way for me to be in and learning, where I was like, I can offer the synthesis of what y'all said, but I didn't know the things you said. Like, I'm learning the things. I learned about reproductive justice. I learned about environmental justice. I learned about racial justice, all by being able to sit and hold and listen and through actual curiosity. Right? I was like, I actually want to know how y'all think we're going to get free. How are we going to get out of this situation? I want to hear what you have to say. And letting my own curiosity also guide what was happening in the room. My own moments of, aha, I get it, would also be part of the synthesis that could happen in the room. And Makani talks about this, Makani Thimba, about how when we are holding the room, it's not like we are blank slates or empty buckets. Or, you know, it's not like we're just supposed to be there as an empty chessboard that everyone's moving around upon. It's like we're also humans and we're also involved. And there are moments where we also need to intervene. And that's how I knew that my politicization had taken root, because there would be moments where I was like, wait, the thing that's happening now is not aligned with where we're trying to go. And I can feel that. And, you know, here's an offering. And now I think I'm in a new phase. I'm learning what this next phase is. It's a little harder to do facilitation now because of the visibility that I have as a writer, right? You can't really be a part of the container in the same way. But I'm learning, like, well, what is it that I can teach? And this was the offering. This was the first big offering, was just like, I can tell you everything I know about how to hold change, you know. So far, the feedback is people are finding it useful. So that is good news to me.
It's such a gift in so many ways. And you've got this way that you introduce the book, where you invite people to walk through the book in different ways, right?
Yeah.
Which I really love. You offer us, there's these different parts. There's a section of assessments, which now that you're talking about it, data. And the writings on Black feminist wisdom as it's being lived, not just theory. And then the section on facilitation and mediation. So it's so interesting. Why do you invite the reader to walk through in any way?
Yeah, well, you know, initially I thought it was going to be a choose your own adventure book. And I had this whole plan where you're going to start from the middle of the book and then you could choose your own adventure to work your way to the edges. And then as we were heading into the design phase, I was like, okay, that's not going to work in terms of helping people. it's fun for me.
In two dimensions,
So I was like, I think it'll kind of convolute the thing that we want people to be able to do, which is easily access the data. But I still wanted to give people that option. And because I wrote it to be consumed in a nonlinear way, I wanted to remind people that that's always possible. I especially wanted to give people the option of going and reading the Black Feminist Wisdom first. Like it could offer a beautiful grounding, especially if you feel like, I'm pretty familiar with emergent strategy, I don't need the refresher, I can skip to that. Or if you're like, I'm coming in and I really don't have a clue about what I most need, then it's like, go to the assessments. And the assessments, my friend Zuri put those together, and they're really skillfully done, and they're easy to do. So you can just kind of get some self-assessment on, like, where is it that I might need the most skill development? And then you can just go straight there, right? If you're great at adaptation, then that might not be where you need to start. You might want to go start with nonlinearity, right? Which is, for some people, the most challenging aspect of emergence.
Right.
And I wanted people to be able to move through the elements in ways that made sense to them. To me, a successful book like this would be one that could, like, live in a bathroom, and people could pick it up while they're in the bathroom and spend like 5 minutes and come away like, I just got something that was like, this is useful. So my dream book is always like the bathroom book, or the book that people are like, I can get something no matter how much time I have to put into it. I was told early in my life, people don't read books. And yet clearly my gift is writing books. Like, I'm like, I like writing books. That's the way I think. And that's the way I operate. So I'm always trying to balance like writing books that even people who don't necessarily have time for a whole book can still access and get what they needed from it.
And also, we're in this short attention span world right now.
Absolutely.
And at the same time, you're inviting folks to kind of also undo the way we've been educated, right? Which is to be linear and to follow the rules and follow the chapter headings.
Yeah. So, and like the reality is, in a space that you're facilitating, the thing that's happening, even if you have a very straightforward agenda, the thing that's happening in the space is not linear. Like, emotions are going to come up when they come up, and strategy is going to become clear when it becomes clear, and relationships are going to form, and the relationships forming will help everything else move, right? So the book is like that too. Also, there's people who are going to read this book and be like, I love Prentice, so I'm going to go read Prentice first, and then I'll go do something else. And it's like relationship does that, right? People have a relationship with some of these writers, like you said. For some people, these are their favorite writers. So I'm like, yeah, go there first. No problem. You'll still get to everything you need to get to in the book.
Adrienne Marie Brown, for joining us to talk about Holding Change. Definitely, we'll have all these links on our website.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate y'all having me on.
And we're wrapping up another edition of Feminist Magazine. And thanks to all of the contributors today, especially to Making Contact Radio. Feminist Magazine is produced by a coalition of feminist volunteers. Don't forget, you can find all the links from our program today on our website, feministmagazine.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter, and sharing behind-the-scenes photos on Instagram. Our programs are archived in the kpfk.org audio archives. You can find our podcasts on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, and via the Stitcher app. And tune in for more from Feminist Magazine. Thanks for listening.
KPFK 90.7 FM presents an afternoon of community dialogue. On Saturday, August 29th, labor organizer Chris Smalls will be in conversation with journalist Aaron Aubrey Kaplan, discussing the future of the working class and his book, When the Revolution Comes. The event takes place at the First Unitarian Church of Los Angeles. Doors open at 12:30 p.m. and the event begins at 1 p.m. This presentation is a fundraiser for listener-supported KPFK. Ticket and schedule information is available at kpfk.org/smalls.
When the revolution comes, when the revolution comes,
when the revolution comes,
when the revolution comes.
KPFK is receiving support from a fundraising concert titled Stanley Clark and Friends, celebrating 50 years of School Days, released October of 1976. The event takes place Wednesday, October 28th, at the Alex Theater in Glendale.
Scheduled performers include Stanley Clark, who is the music director for the evening, along with John Densmore and Robbie Krieger of The Doors, Danny Carey, drummer for Tool, bassist Rudy Sarzo, vocalist Michelle Coltrane, and additional guests to be announced. Proceeds benefit people-powered KPFK 90.7 FM Los Angeles. Ticket information and details are available online at kpfk.org/stanley. That's kpfk.org/stanley.